Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Tech Can't Save Us. I am your co-host, William Gatsby-P.
And I'm Paul David. And wow, it's just the two of us, OG Tech Can't Save Us. Rebecca's out. And why is she out? Well, what happened?
So I just want to make it very clear that the two OGs of Tech Can't Save Us was written in the script, and Paul hasn't decided.
I don't just throw around the term OG lightly.
No, yeah, Rebecca's brunch habit has got the best of her, so that's why she's not here, but she will be back with us next week. And before jumping in, we do have some sad news, which is unfortunately Savina has moved on. She's got another company that she has to run, and so is going to take some time away from the podcast. Maybe she'll rejoin us one day, who knows, but for the foreseeable, it'll just be me, Paul, and Rebecca.
We hope so. She was a fantastic addition. We miss you, Savina. Please come back to us.
And you'd better be listening because, you know, like orcs.
I mean, we can check IP addresses. We can do that. We are a tech podcast, so. So, not to be creepy, but before we...
I just want to make listeners very clear, we cannot do that. I do not have that data available to me.
We could find it. So just before we jump in, y'all, today's podcast, if you're listening via Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please do go ahead and share a rating with us. We would love that. We actually had someone come up to us at a recent conference and say they appreciated our episode on bootstrapping versus VC funding. That was like... the first time anyone ever mentioned listening to our podcast directly, which was awesome.
Basically, we're famous, and if you don't leave a review, then you're a fucking loser. So,
it's a problem.
Yeah, whatevs. Yeah,
you're a problem.
Today's episode, which you will enjoy to hear, is called We Brackets Won't Close Brackets Work, is all about WeWork, the rise, the fall, and eventual filing for bankruptcy. As a team that sort of uses co-working spaces and shared office spaces, this one obviously struck a nerve with us, so we were interested to do a bit of a deep dive on WeWork and what went wrong. So let's get to it. To give a bit of a painting of the scene, got a 13-year timeline here. So 2010, WeWork launches. 2014, its valuation already crosses $1 billion and it's achieved its unicorn status. 2017, SoftBank Group begins its investment journey, pouring $18.5 billion into the company over the next few years. 2019, valuation skyrockets to $47 billion. As of 2022, nearly 800 locations in 39 countries, one of the biggest real estate sort of empires in the world. From 2018 until 2020, string of lawsuits directed against WeWork by former employees, ranging from everything from sexual harassment, age discrimination, gender pay gaps, and more. All of the bad publicity and questions about their business model leads to their initial investor, SoftBank, withdrawing its $3 billion tender offer to buy shares directly from stakeholders, prompting WeWork to sue them. And then for the last 2 years, the downfall of WeWork has been widely reported, even prompting two television series depicting all of the unfortunate events that we just spoke through. When Netflix is making a documentary about you, you are in trouble. Adam Neumann, the founder, stepped down in September 2019, but the damage is already done. Before WeWork could even go public in October of 2021, they were already looking at a 98% reduction in valuation. So at the end of October 31st, Wall Street Journal reported that WeWork were planning to file for bankruptcy. The next day, Wednesday the 1st of November, share price was at a record low for the company. So what are our thoughts on the WeWork journey? What happened here? What the hell is going on? Thoughts, comments, prayers, and hopes, Paul?
I think, first of all, I also heard that recently in London that they served notice to some of their tenants in a few of their London locations and basically said, you've got 30 days to clear out, like we're closing down this location. So that could be a signal that part of WeWork's woes could be a signal, definitely is, where irresponsible scaling and kind of the basic inability to manage revenue versus profits. I think that's been part of what Adam Neumann's been accused of is basically not being the most judicious fiscal manager of the company and taking on investment and scaling, you know, way too fast. There's a 2019 article from The Guardian that summarized the criticism, I think, pretty succinctly by saying that the company was, quote, renting long and subleasing short, which left it exposed to risk. So I think that's a big part of this. The New York Times reported that WeWork had or has more than 18 million square feet of rentable office space in the US and Canada alone, and that its failure could have a sizable impact on the commercial real estate industry, which obviously took a hit because of COVID-related lockdowns. There's so many commercial real estate investors and landlords trying to get folks back into jobs. And at the same time, the Times is reporting that there's substantial doubt on their continued business operations, and maybe that'll help the company buy time with lenders to seek additional capital through the issuance of debt, equity, or the sale of assets. Also, I think, you know, the company's pricing model was built on this assumption of perpetual growth, which I think was a broader problem in the tech community. And, you know, they ignored market fluctuations and downturns. I'm not really sure how they quite handled the pandemic lockdowns, if they contracted at all during that. But yeah, I think that's some of the issues at play here.
Yeah, my feeling is that they never really nailed their business model because they grew so quickly and were so the darling of the VC world for so long. And there was some signs that maybe that work was starting to happen, and then COVID hit, and like, what could be more fucking catastrophic for a co-working company than COVID? And they were probably, as soon as that happened, living on borrowed time. And, you know, quite frankly, it's probably impressive they managed to make it to 2023, given how much money they would have been losing in that period. I do think too, there was always like, and this is just sort of anecdata and vibe, so take it for what it is. I did always think that their business model was a little bit, who is this for? Because like me and Paul and the rest of the team all use co-working spaces, and we've never considered WeWork because like it's still pretty bloody expensive. Like, don't get me wrong, it's cheaper than compared to hiring an entire office floor. But it seemed like its business model was, hey, you used to spend £1 million a year on office space. Why don't you spend 200 grand with us? And that audience exists, but it doesn't seem enough to grow it as much as it did. And often that audience would realize, well, I can just do exactly what you're doing. Buy a floor and just co-work it, and buy a floor of an office building. Help, buy a floor of a WeWork and just co-work with sort of 70% the capacity and make much of the same savings, because I'm now on a hybrid model. So it did feel like they, you know, all the co-working spaces we go to for young, scrappy startups that then scale, they tend to be very different vibes, much more affordable, different locations, way less corporate and up their own arse. And when they move out, they tend to move more to like a private dedicated office rather than a WeWork. So I know I always felt like maybe they had this huge influx of clients and companies when they first came up with the idea, which was very unique and novel, but they never kind of had that process of feeding, like that grassroots of, oh, well, I started off as a young scrappy entrepreneur in a WeWork and I've grown and now I've got a company of 20 and I'm going to relocate them to WeWork and you're going to make all of that money. It felt like those people buggered off to other places. And so like that then combined with COVID feels like part of the issue.
I think what's happened here is a lot of the weight of the contraction falls at the feet of the founder, Adam Neumann, and people saying that the expansion was driven by a bit of hype versus substance and the charisma of him in particular as an executive. So lavish events and you know, extravagant brand partnerships, the brand being built on hype rather than tangible value, these aggressive marketing campaigns that overshadowed some operational efficiencies and just like failure to address like growing concerns about the company's viability. I have a friend, dare I say, a former love interest who worked in the WeWork for business side of things. And, you know, I remember her telling me about flying around the world and kind of going to all these, you know, far-flung places trying to sell WeWork for business to businesses in the locales. And I think perhaps part of that was overestimating their ability to scale the same way in a lot of different places. They went on this relentless expansion spree, and it was kind of a shotgun approach that overlooked local dynamics, which are really important to co-working spaces. You know, you think about who gets what co-working space and why, usually has to do with some level of proximity to, you know, where they live or their gym or just like where their team is and stuff like that. So there's all these little cultural nuances and kind of varying demands that I don't think WeWork took advantage of. Mm-hmm. And I remember when she was telling me about the WeWork for business scaling strategy, and I was like, I don't know if this is going to work the same in Chicago as it does in Jakarta. You know what I mean? So yeah, I mean, I think it resulted in oversaturated markets, unoccupied spaces, and just strained resources. And actually, eventually this friend was laid off as part of that strategy not working ultimately. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
There's a few things there that I think probably led to their downfall and is often the case in this is like, one, yeah, it felt like they spent as much money as they could do on everything. Like it was like, we're not just going to do events. We're going to do the best events. We're going to fly our team all over the place and like, you know, no expense spared to be WeWork. And you saw that in the office buildings, which were, you know, hands to them, always very nice spaces, but they were like, just the embodiment of corporate. For UK listeners, it's just someone took Canary Wharf and took a building from it and put it, and also quite often in locations that are like, well, yeah, I mean, like, most people have moved out to the sort of outskirts of London. They don't want to travel to fucking Shoreditch anymore. Like, yeah, I know 5-10 years ago, that was like a big company pull when everyone was in the office. Even before COVID accelerated this trend, the general trend was, you know, your team, especially in tech, which is obviously the sector you want to go after if you're going to have longevity, they are much more on a hybrid work model. And if they do want to travel to a co-working space, it's one that's like 10, 15 minutes down the road, not 40 minutes into central London, mm-hmm. to then go to like the most corporate, large experience they possibly could, that's just like being in an office in the city in your sort of early 20s. You know, they want to go to a more low-key, chilled co-working space that's like close to them, gives them a place that they can work and sort of get their head down. And I do think most of the co-working spaces that I know that are growing in chain, going from 10 to 20 to 50, it's more intimate, small spaces, 100, 200 people, it's not that small, that are far more around convenience of location than anything else. And I feel like WeWork put all of their eggs in the this is a cool giant building basket, which is only makes sense for so long. And yeah, ultimately what people are after is convenience. Because, you know, we co-work all the time. Mm-hmm. The two co-working spaces I go to the most often are the two closest to where I live. Mm-hmm. You know, and I live in Dalston and Acton. I move between two places. And that's all they are to me. They're both, thankfully, quite nice places. Mm-hmm. But they could be total shitholes. They'd still be the places I went to most, purely because they're near me and they're better than a cafe. And so I think that not understanding that fundamental part of their business model is like what was initial nail in the coffin, and then a bunch of bad luck and bad management sort of drove all the other nails home.
Yeah, and I think part of that's like understanding your audience and who your buyers are, and like understanding that convenience and proximity are, you know, probably at the top of their audience's sort of buying preferences. I think the other thing there too is like not overhyping what your actual product is. Like, let's be honest, these are warmed over corporate office spaces, you know what I mean, with like a little bit extra techie zhuzh, and that probably works for like a, you know, a core demographic that are already living in, you know, these urban centers that are paying a ton of money for corporate office spaces and maybe want a more chilled techish vibe. But ultimately, you know, we got invited by one of our lovely clients to their flagship office here in London, Waterloo, and it was stunning, it was amazing, we had a lovely lunch and stuff like that. But have we been back there since? No. We've been to, you know, smaller and more local places that are closer to home and just frankly, you know, less douchey, less corporate. And so yeah, I think like not really,
it's just fucking frantic. Like it was, there's so many people in one place. Like it's not like, you know, it was such a nice experience to go see our client and have a coffee, but like to then actually get your head down and do work, you're like, this isn't what I want. Like I want a quiet room.
Yeah, I mean, they're also kind of dicks to us, if I remember.
Yeah, like, they were total dicks
like
to us.
We didn't have the right pass or something like that and couldn't get
they
a team
so
member
so rude
into.
About it. And
it was just like, okay, like if that's your vibe.
The person whose guest we were had to come down to the reception, have like a 5-minute argument with the receptionist and then let us in. You're just like, well, yeah, I don't want to come back here. Like you guys essentially sell hospitality in office space, and your hospitality is dog shit.
So. Yeah.
This has been a bit of a consistent theme in sort of a couple of the last pods, which is like an overly charismatic founder who sort of blasts through all of the usual hurdles that a company would need to go and sort of stress test and prove. What do you think of that kind of leadership element, and how much of this was like, you know, the fish rots from the head and you have this sort of charismatic Adam Newman who's like doing all these events, getting all this hype, and there's never that conversation amongst VC investors, amongst your wider team, of just like, dude, what do we sell and how do we sell it well? How do we evolve the product? Because it hasn't changed in a decade, which, you know, in the world of tech and offices is just insane. So yeah, how much do you think this was like to do with Adam Newman and just like, you know, being a very charismatic showman but actually not a very good product builder?
Yeah, I mean, I think it does come down to product and audience and like really understanding the connection between the two of those. I think if WeWork narrative's vision and focused on, okay, who are we providing for? Young executives at marketing agencies, for example, or, you know, young startup founders in these various tech sectors, and like, what does a truly bespoke office experience look like for them? You look at like what, for example, Hubble has done. Like, you know, WeWork could have done what Hubble's done, where they've allowed people to have really flexible accounts and basically bank credits and use them towards like individual offices for a day. For example, we're renting a room with Hubble in central London for a board meeting next week. You know, that's a very niche experience. That's a couple hundred pounds problems right there on the table. You scale that out over to millions of people trying to organize their board meetings. We use it when we need to be in a location in a certain place in London or around the world. I use it in Mexico City when I visit there. I use it in Barcelona, many other cities. WeWork could have done that and brought me in as a customer who has, hey, now you have global access to all these different co-working spaces. I know they have kind of like a Premier Pass or something that it's called, and one of our clients uses it. But how do you build long-time customer value, lifetime customer value? I think that's a more interesting question than how do we scale bland corporate offices to people who don't really want them or are actually trying to move away from them. So yeah, I think they got up their own butts a bit about this dynamic CEO and the charisma there, and away from, okay, what are our customers asking for? What does a better product look like? And that relentless pursuit of that.
There's a few lessons here for folk within tech to take to heart, which is one, you know, this guy was also clearly a bit of a dick. He'd always be barefoot. He loved an expensive brand of tequila, and he'd have regular outbursts. That's from a piece of the Business Insider that spoke to, like, you know, a dozen of his first office of employees. So, like, one is, like, always beware the sort of charismatic tech founder who seems erratic and can't back it up. Two, and I think this is maybe on the more charitable side of viewing what happened, how easy it is to get replaced in a niche that you created, which is, you know, I think WeWork absolutely zeroed onto something better than anyone had done before, which is the way that we do office spaces is stupid and there needs to be something as an alternative. And that's what everyone got hyped about. But then they didn't do the product research, the user research to realize how it was going to evolve. And yes, you need sort of three or four very wanky offices in the center of a major city. There's always going to be an appetite for that. But really, where you kind of get your market saturation is having lots of 200 to 300 person offices all around the suburban centers where the true C-suite live and are going to navigate from and to on a day-to-day basis. You know, I can very much see, just from their sort of branding, their vibe, and hearing about the leadership, there's probably a large element of arrogance of, like, oh, we just know what everyone wants and we're not going to do the user testing and the research. I would very much kind of put Twitter in this category. Twitter kind of invented social media. They've never made money. If you don't stay at the cutting edge of innovation in tech, you are so quickly replaced that it will make your head spin. And on the flip side of this, I would say a company that's a very good example of having not done that through very smart marketing and product development is Airbnb. They took a concept and did it better than anyone else had done before. And then they just stayed innovating, advocating, and constantly knowing what their core product is and what the users who use that core product need, and built every hire around that. So I think, yeah, that's probably the biggest lesson from me is, like, you better never feel complacent in tech, because if you aren't doing the work to stay at the cutting edge, you're probably already behind.
I did hear tell of a recent or a new Airbnb competitor called Kindred. It's livekindred.com. Home sharing, basically. So you earn credits by basically swapping with other people and things like that. So for example, if I want to go rent in Los Angeles or something like that, I would accrue a few credits and then I could use that towards people renting my place, vice versa. And the costs are pretty minimal. I think close to zero. So I think there's a piece of this that's like these companies catching a wave that was like, oh, you know, people moving around a bit more and like home sharing, people needing flexible office space, you know, at the you know, forefront of the freelancer tech, you know, digital nomad revolution. And now those business models have aged, whereas, like, I feel like Airbnb isn't being able to pivot much more deftly, and WeWork just kind of hasn't. And if anything, they went in another direction with some of these different initiatives that they had. I think one was called We Live and Rise by We that kind of stretched the company's focus. They're just diversifying beyond their core offering and diluting their brand identity, and then losing that appeal that initially made them the game changer, instead of saying, hey, relentless focus on core audience, their office needs, if any, and how are we going to serve those? In a weird way, it was almost like they let diversions in products be the tail that wagged the dog, instead of just like, hey, we really get our customers. We really want to serve them. We want them to have the best possible office, co-working, hot desk, whatever experience, and we're going to deliver that. And I think that, yeah, it's unfortunate.
Yeah, I think it's that lack of understanding what your core product is before you then do diversity of offering built around that product. And this, to be fair, is more a reflection of sort of VC world and just generally growth is more important than profit. Mm. And like, oh, don't worry, we'll figure this out. And like, yeah, that does sometimes work. I mean, like, Facebook is one of the classic examples. It was not profitable for the first sort of like 7 or 8 years of its existence. And it was always like, trust me, when we turn on our advertising function, we're going to make billions. And they were totally right. But for every Facebook, there's a Twitter or there's a WeWork. And I do think that there's increasingly within the VC space, especially in the tech VC space, a sort of like understanding of how much this does happen at small and large scales, where people get way too into the hype and don't explore the fundamental business model enough of like, okay, well, if you have grown 10 times in this year, why have your profits not grown 10 times? What do you mean you've never made any profits? What is your business plan to show me that you're going to make profits? Why are you doing this long-term cost and short-term lead? Like, you know, there is so much more of a surgical eye. And I do think that, like, yeah, Adam Newman and the rest, WeWork and a few other companies like him that were founded around the same time did get probably the easiest ride they'll ever get in terms of VC sort of security stress testing and just generally willingness to give away funds. We spoke about Babylon Health in a few episodes ago. There's a few of them that you're just like, oh yeah, VCs just didn't really know what the fuck they were doing with tech at this point, and they were just funding stuff that got way too big too quickly, way too much focus on growth rather than profit, and it was always going to end in tears.
Yeah, I think, and maybe that's a little bit of an argument casting a bit of sympathy on Adam Newman and the crew, is like, you know, we've just gone through this period where VCs were completely overvaluing companies and things like that. The market in general was overvaluing companies.
The fact these guys were like 58 billion is just what? Like, that's just insane.
And you're seeing sort of the nadir of that. And it's just sort of like, okay, well, these guys, gals, and they, thems took advantage of a wild funding environment. Yeah. And so, like, to some extent, who can blame them? Absolutely, we can definitely blame them. But I mean, they were part of a larger ecosystem that's now, as you said, drawn itself back and is more focused on, okay, like, are you profitable? Like, quarter to quarter, what's your turnover? Are there losses, like massive losses being posted, as was the case with WeWork? And now we're realizing, I think it was really brilliantly called, I think, the millennial lifestyle subsidy, which is like, you know, sort of more on the consumer side, but how we've all benefited from these massive overvaluations and overinvestment in these companies in terms of our, you know, the cost of our Uber rides and the cost of our airline tickets and all these different services and things like that, Airbnbs to a certain extent. And now as consumers, we're seeing these massive, you know, massive inflation. We're seeing massive cost increase, and we don't have the $5 Uber ride anywhere in central London. It's now, you know, 15, 20 to even order an Uber from the first, you know, to go anywhere in London.
You get an Uber in central London, you've already won. Whatever the price is, the fact you've got the one to show up is like, fuck.
Exactly. Yeah. And even the friction that we're seeing now with like the regulatory frameworks catch up with these companies, that, you know, in the example of Uber and the London drivers basically being classified as employees and the impact that's had on that. And then how, as you said, it's allowed competitors to move into the market. So I think it's like, as with anything, it's a mix of like the regulatory environment, the funding environment, and the individual moves that these companies are making, you know, rightly or wrongly, in terms of where they end up.
We're both in the tech sector and both like have been in major cities our whole lives. I do think there is like a real element there of, you know, I know so many people that when they were like 25 were in 50 to 60K paying jobs at one of these tech companies. You're like, fucking how? You don't know how to do anything. Like, you're 3 years out of university. I know you. You are not in a horrible way. This just sounds like I'm casting shade on my friends. I know you. You are not offering 60K's worth of services to whatever company you're part of. And it's just like, oh, we've got the money and we've got the funding, so fuck it. Like, all of our interns now get paid 60K, and we just assume that means all of our interns are great, rather than like, oh yeah, we have all this money, let's hire people that are going to actually grow the business and have a really stringent process for hiring and give someone 60K if they're worth it, not just give 60K away because we think it's cool and we think that makes us an important company.
I mean, I think it's okay to cast shade on the tech community, but yeah, I think at the same time, it's again that ecosystem thing of like, down the people down at the employee line have been to some extent overpaid, and we're seeing, you know, mass layoffs and stuff like that. And the value in terms of what they're delivering versus what they're getting isn't quite aligned, in part because of these overvaluations and overinvestment in them. So it's okay to take a look at that and balk at what you're seeing there. So
yeah, and just that general myth, don't worry, the profit will come. And it's like, well, if it's not come now when we have one building, why will it come when we have 60? And don't, there are some times where there is an explanation for that. But it's normally a 20-page, very complex explanation that someone very smart needs to explain to you with a chalkboard, not just like, ah, oh, just don't worry about it. Like, it will happen. Like, all right, Adam Newman, put your shoes on.
Well, thanks, folks, for joining us on our in-depth conversation about WeWork, or I guess We Won't Work in this case, in terms of where WeWork's headed. As always, please continue to support and share our podcast with your network. Make sure you catch up on episodes via Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other podcast platform that you occupy. And yeah, be sure to hit subscribe and stay in the loop and share episodes with your network. Really appreciate it.
And very last thing, if you do want to stay up to date on all the latest podcasts and all the other sort of news that we share, funding opportunities, tech jobs, head over to literalhumans.com. There's there's a banner at the as soon as you land on the website that gets you to subscribe to our newsletter. If you're interested in anything about the world of tech, then that's the place for you. Awesome. See you next week, guys.
Thanks as always. Bye, y'all.